Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Extra Rounds Podcast. My name is Mike Dice.
I'm Elias.
We are here to talk about all things MMA, which these days is kind of also boxing. So the big story this week, Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, we're going to have boxer slash professional MMA fighter Ana Houlihan on to talk about that a little bit in her own career. And then later we'll be joined by the UFC's own Joe Lozon to talk about his upcoming fight against Clay Guida. So it's a pretty stacked show, I think. Two really interesting people to talk to right now. So first of all, let's get back to the big story of the week, which is Mayweather McGregor, which is not going away. What did you think of the fight?
Well, I thought it was in practice was an interesting fight as much as it could be. I didn't expect it to go quite as it did, and I thought it was interesting. I was impressed with McGregor's angles and his footwork, I was impressed with Mayweather's conditioning, just his outclassing of McGregor the second half of the fight, and his strategy and how he really just felt free to let loose. As soon as McGregor started tiring and wincing a bit much from the body work, which for the first three or four or five rounds was like all that Mayweather would occasionally even throw, but it was working, shots to the body. As soon as that happened, Mayweather just went in with like no regard and no respect for anything, squared up, wading in a way that he's never done before, in a way that certainly he should be able to do against a person who's literally a novice boxer who's never done this before. But, you know, once they're in there, it's still another grown man who's heavier than you and taller than you, and so that was impressive. But you were there in person, so I'm curious what you thought of it, and I'm also curious what your thoughts are on the judging. I don't know if you paid attention to the scorecards. It didn't go the distance, so we didn't need the judges. And thank God we didn't need them, because they were awful as far as I was concerned, Mike. Two of the judges only gave McGregor like one round. That's insane. I gave him the first four rounds. At least you got to say he won the first three. But it seemed like they were really penalizing him, it would appear, for doing like those illegal hammer fists that the ref didn't penalize him for. Like that was really trippy to me. So what was the atmosphere like for you, and what did you think of the scoring?
Well, we'll talk about scoring first since it's fresh in my mind. It was surprising. I think that so in the arena we could see the Showtime broadcast, which is not typical of a UFC event,
right?
Or I don't think, at least. Yeah. Otherwise, the UFC's on-screen graphics is very minimal, so you are seeing it. It's just hard to notice it. Mm. But like, you could look up. Like, I remember looking up and seeing the Showtime judges' scoring card and thinking, okay, well, he's got it the same way I do. I thought Conor won the first three rounds. Mm. I know there could be some debate about that, whether he actually won them or Floyd let him win them, but that's a different story.
Yeah, right. Who cares?
Either way,
punches.
Either way, I thought they were 10-9 for Conor McGregor, whether Floyd let him win them or he actually won them or not.
Sure.
I thought the fourth. I kind of agreed with Conor's assessment when he was breaking it down. I kind of thought the fourth round could have gone either way.
Sure.
I think he could have given it to Conor. I think he could have given it to Floyd.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I had it 3-1, and then I think Conor won that was the eighth, and so I had it 5-4 going into the 10 in favor of Mayweather, and which is a lot more competitive than I think people would have thought. I know that when I was talking to some, Jose Youngs, fan-sided full combat guy, that he made this point that like if Conor wins four rounds, it's a huge upset whether he loses or not, because he's met I forget whether the example was Maidana or Cotto or whoever, Pacquiao. Only won four rounds against Mayweather. So he would have met that benchmark. And that was really interesting. And I remember thinking like, oh, he's done it. He's won four rounds and they're still like, and he could still win on the judges' scorecard. And I remember looking up at the Showtime judges' scorecard and seeing that he kind of had it similar. So like, I know, I don't remember how the back half was, but I know he definitely gave Conor the first three rounds, which meant going into the ninth, it was 4-4, which is crazy to think about. I was shocked to see that it was 8-1, and the only thing that makes sense is that it was like this boxing guard that didn't think that was giving it to Floyd when they shouldn't have, or they were giving him more credit for the strategy he was using, they were penalizing McGregor, though the judge never took him around and took a point.
The ref, which was absurd.
Right.
He was hammer fisting the fuck out of the back of his
for
head.
For doing that. And so, you know, it fortunately didn't have to go. I think there would have been a lot of like, if it had gone to the judges' scorecards, I think there would have been a lot of outcry about how dirty it was, which would have tarnished the whole thing.
Right, right. It was a pretty tarnished affair, but it would have been horrible.
But I mean,
horribly more tarnished.
Like, could you imagine all the MMA fans in the wake of this, especially the ones who were like riding on Conor so hard?
Of course.
You know, this boxing's rigged. This was rigged. Yeah. Like, you know, how can he score? Especially with that one judge scoring it a little bit, I think, more fairly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it would have been like, all you need is two judges.
Yeah.
And I think it would have looked that way.
Yes,
so
that's right.
I don't know if you saw, there's like a video. I posted it to my Instagram this morning or yesterday. Somebody dubbed over the referee giving instructions to Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. It's funny because he's like, I don't work for you. I work for Floyd. If you so much as touch Floyd, I'm going to DQ you. And he's like,
Turns out he didn't.
I'll hit you. He's like, I'll hit you. You're my own self. It's really funny. You should
I will check that out. As it turns out, it was nothing like that.
He's like, if you try any UFC stuff in here, I'll slap you my damn self.
It was all tough talk because there was no way anyone was going to get disqualified in that match. There was no way they were going to let. I mean, Conor McGregor, it would have been, for boxing fans who don't realize this, all those hammer fists to the back of the head are very much illegal in MMA. Like, there's no rule set that Conor McGregor's ever fought in other than on the street where there's no rules that he's ever been allowed to do that. It was definitely illegal. I was surprised it never even gave him a real warning. That was kind of crazy.
Yeah. Angelo Reyes, boxing coach who obviously knows the sport really well.
What's up, Angelo?
Says that boxing is scored by – and that was the other thing that I was thinking about too. Like, we're all scoring – like, I'm scoring it from what I do for MMA.
Sure.
And I feel like I'm fairly accurate when I score in MMA. So, like, I'm looking at it through that lens, and he's bringing up that boxing scoring is done by ring generalship, effective aggressiveness, clean punching, and defense. So – you know, if you could use those rules, I guess, to...
There's really no way around those first three rounds. If you just look at how much Mayweather threw, his posture, if he was backtracking, and how much he landed, I mean, McGregor just outlanded him in all of those. So there's no defensible way, in my opinion, Angelo, that those three can be scored. Now, that's a separate argument from saying that Floyd was playing possum and was part of an overall strategy to give up rounds, let Conor tire himself out, to see what Conor was doing. And you know, and Floyd has great eyes. He watches his opponents really carefully. But yeah, I mean, let's count it up ourselves and look at the punches landed. I mean, if one guy is landing more or significantly more punches than the other guy in the round, I'm not sure. I mean, yes, I'm not saying McGregor was jarring Mayweather, but Mayweather wasn't even throwing enough to even have a chance to score more than McGregor. So
I remember.
I think Mayweather was in control. Don't get me wrong, but I can't give him those early rounds. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying that he was losing control of the fight. He just gave up some rounds.
There was like a moment really early in the second round, and I was like, okay, Mayweather's just letting Conor punch. Like, that's what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think I recognized that really early.
Yeah.
And I was like, and Conor's going to do it.
Sure.
We've seen him punch himself out before.
Sure.
So
it's easy to do, man. You got to come out for more rounds than he's ever had to come out for before. You've got a weird pace. You've got, you know, and he's throwing punches with more weight on his fist than he's ever done in a fight before too. Twice as much. So it's definitely a tough task to say the least.
But, it's 2:15. I don't know.
Should give Anna a call. I've got some more, stuff to talk about. We got plenty of episodes left. More importantly, let's hear from our boxing expert, Anna Hulatin, former boxing world champion, is also now an MMA fighter, friend of the show. Let's see. Give her a ring now.
Is this good? Also works with the one and only Angelo Reyes.
That's right. Thanks for watching, Angelo. That's so cool. Angelo has the Cage Fighters, a really great TV show and podcast. Super busy out of there in the fight capital of the world, and he always is supportive of the show. He's been on the show multiple times. He's always watching. We really appreciate that. The guy coaches some of the best in the world, has some of the best programming out there in the world, and he still makes time for us. So that's awesome. All right. Anna, this is Elias and Mike. How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. How you doing, Elias? How you doing, Mike? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. We're really excited to have you. We definitely want to hear what's coming up next for you personally, but we also want to make use of your expertise to analyze and look back on this McGregor Mayweather fight. If you'll indulge us, how did the fight go in your eyes? If you could sum it up and like characterize the ebbs and flows of that fight and how it ended, how would you characterize it? What did you see in there?
It was pretty entertaining. Obviously, the hype got me intrigued. I think Conor McGregor got me. He's a great salesman. I never personally met the man, but I just hated his guts for all the things that he was saying about boxing. I thought it was just so disrespectful, and for Floyd to go in there and just be like a Spartan, to me, what Floyd did in the first couple of rounds is he had his shield, he shielded up, and he started jousting, he started spearing through Conor McGregor's body, and, 10th round came, and there was a big stoppage, and, it lifted a lot of weight off my shoulders, because for the past several weeks, it's interesting to, listen to a lot of different perspectives, especially from people who have not followed boxing or don't even understand the history of it, or have never been in a boxing gym and hasn't seen, what it's about. So it's nice to actually have all of this play out the way that it did. And, I almost feel like, a part of me can just close that chapter, in my life. So it was frustrating. I gotta admit, just to hear all the different things that people were saying.
It definitely seemed like there was this very boxing versus MMA thing going on, and boxing was getting the worst of it because Conor's legion of fans can be a little overzealous. But, Elias and I were talking about the scoring and, racking our brains around it. Did you score the fight as you watch it? And if you did, how did you score it?
I'm not very good at scoring because I tend to be biased. I look at more at technique. But there's some people who look at the round per round and then they'll score. And then there's other people who would look at the endurance or the intensity level of like one fighter versus another. And so I kind of felt like going into this fight, Floyd was going to take Conor into some quicksand and kind of carry him deep. And, with that said, I think it's hard for a lot of people to understand the whole flow of it. So I didn't really necessarily score it. It's hard because a lot of people give Conor a lot of credit for the first part of the fight versus in my eyes, I'm thinking I'm not giving him any credit because he's actually letting Floyd do what he's doing. As a fighter, it's all about protecting your position or lobbying for the better position. And it felt like Floyd was getting the better end of it, even though Conor was, quote unquote, was scoring. It's a 36-minute game. And so, I don't know. I just maybe I'm too biased, but I saw what Floyd was doing from the get go. He was trying to figure out Conor, see what he's gonna come out with, if he was gonna box or if he's gonna make it dirty, and come about the third round. Like I can already see in the corner, Conor was just gasping for air, and that was the entertaining part for me. Like in between rounds, whenever the camera would pan out to each fighter, I was laughing hysterically, and I'm thinking, man, there is no shortcut to this fight. Just like in anything, there's no shortcut in anything. And for me, it was almost my way of like digging in Conor and saying, yeah, you can't just walk into the sport not having any background experience whatsoever, because there's a lot of people like myself who is just cut and bled and just cried for the sport, and a lot of people like devote their lives into this. And so I don't know, it was a passionate fight for me, but in terms of the scoring, I just kind of see it more of the long game where for all the boxing fans or for anyone who wants to know a little bit more, a fight that you can watch is Azuma Nelson versus oh my gosh, I'm forgetting his name, he just got inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame too here in Nevada, is oh my gosh, I can't believe it's slipping my tongue. Salvador Sanchez, there you go.
Nice.
He's one of my favorite fighters, but there's a lot of back and forth action in that fight, and you can start to see Azuma Nelson, he was scoring a lot over Salvador Sanchez, and the way that Sanchez plays out the entire fight, and this is back then when they had 15 rounds, he basically had Azuma Nelson feeling like he was winning the fight, and Azuma Nelson, he just couldn't finish it because the intensity was just so high. And so that's a part of the fight game that you know, I appreciate a lot in seeing with Floyd being at 40 and retired, not fighting for the past 2 years against someone who's prime, like Conor McGregor, who's 29, has been in a couple of fights and is using, like, amazing machinery over at the UFC PI. And it was reminiscent of Rocky IV. I don't know. What do you guys think?
We were chatting a little about that. I mean, I certainly can't disagree with you personally. I mean, I feel because, and if we're talking like the rules of scoring and how they do it round by round, yeah, sure. I personally said, okay, because of how many he threw, landed, and compared to Mayweather, that McGregor was the one who should have... I scored the first four rounds for McGregor. But that said, I didn't ever feel like Mayweather was out of control, and I felt like you were saying, you know, I got a sense of, although I don't have your expert eyes, and Mike was saying a similar thing, that we got the sense that it's, you know, even if he was giving up those rounds, he was giving them up, and it was a part of a larger plan. Yeah. And so it was not as if Mayweather had lost control of it. So I did think it was ridiculous to not give McGregor, that if I was a judge looking at like who scored more, I got to look at who scored more. And so I thought it was kind of crazy that the judges only gave McGregor one round. But that said, I didn't ever feel that Mayweather was out of control. I did, what was very interesting to me, I'm curious, you guys saw this, but when I thought McGregor was in trouble when, I forget what round it is, but Mayweather went back to the body, even the first few rounds of Mayweather was only throwing very, very occasionally. He was going to the chest and the body. He threw a punch to McGregor's body. It didn't even seem to land super clean or hard, but McGregor saw it coming and like winced and shelled up like in advance real, real bad. I'm like, uh-oh, that means these have been hurting him bad and this can't be good for him. I was like, this is the turning point. He wasn't showing it before, but McGregor is clearly feeling these shots that have been coming to the body.
100%, and I think if anyone wants to learn more about composure, I think this is a perfect example of what that means when you're going up at a high-level fight or a competition, no matter what sport you're in, you know?
Was
reminiscent of everybody's feelings.
Well, I mean, you know, and that's the thing. I've been such a big critic of this fight, and I wrote an article after doing some interviews and investigating and looking at law, that I thought this fight was not even legal, right? Like, I don't think it should have happened. I think it was absurd for a lot of reasons. You know, once it was there, though, it was, you know, something to look at, I guess. But part of the frustration, I'm curious, was there stress like, oh, my gosh, if somehow some fucking lightning strikes and this kid, 0-0 novice, just, like, knocks out the 40-year-old, was part of your relief? Was there any stress that, okay, theoretically there's a 1 in a billion chance McGregor's going to win, and then you would have to deal with that?
It's compelling because of all the hype, but if you come down to the basic of it, if someone who's a novice at it and is trying to go for the quote-unquote knockout punch, usually it's they show it.
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine if Connor's like, oh, there he is, his eyes are going to light up. It's almost like putting your hand out in poker.
That's true.
Unless you've done endless rounds of just boxing and just understanding the nuances of it, the short end, meaning four rounders all the way up to the 12-round fight, comparing it from sparring into an actual live competition, you know, there's so many different things that you have to acquire throughout the years of training in it. So it's hindsight is 2020, obviously, but yeah, no, the hype really got me excited about it, which made me so I was just at the edge of my seat every second of this fight because I'm thinking, okay, is Conor really going to do it? I'm like, oh, no, in about 10 minutes, Floyd pretty much has got him. And with his 40-year-old self, just coming out of retirement, I mean, like, wow, you know, I heard Floyd, he didn't even spar like a month before the fight because he was trying to save his hands. And I'm thinking that right there, it already takes away a level of your intensity and your endurance and even your sharpness. And so I thought that was very impressive to go up against someone who's at the top of their game physically in Conor McGregor. So, yeah.
That's true. Well, what are you up to now? What's on your plate these days? Oh, go ahead, Mikey.
I heard buried in all the store, the news for Mayweather McGregor, there was an interview that I wanted to ask her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where she mentions her career and says that she would like to fight, if I remember correctly, Heather Hardy in Bellator, which is an intriguing matchup.
Yeah, you know, it's something that can possibly happen. My promoter, my boxing promoter, Alan Tremblay, is working alongside with Bellator, and they have this pretty exciting idea, and it hasn't been done yet, where you have someone like myself who has competed in boxing, won a few world titles, and has dabbled into MMA, along with someone like Heather Hardy, who's won her titles and has recently done her pro MMA debut. And you know, there's a stage that Bellator can provide where we can do a lot of crossing of the combat sports. So, you know, just at the end of the day, you know, in the fight game, you know, there's so many moving parts to have something done. Like, for instance, the Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather fight. I mean, that took about a year in negotiations. You know what I mean? It's fast and smooth. Both parties were up for it. But in terms of, like, having all the little fine print and having both sides agree to everything, you know, it just takes a while. So, you know, with that said, you know, I'm just at the gym, cross-training a lot with the grappling, with the kicking and the punching, elbows and knees, and just trying to craft my game and going to the whole essence of it and just having fun with it again. And I feel like sometimes when you're just so wrapped up with a sport or anything that you do, you almost get tunnel vision and you forget a lot of the other stuff, or you're not aware of all the other things that can happen, which can enhance your perspective on a lot of different things, you know. And I kind of feel like that's where I'm at, just fighting for the past, I don't know, 15 years, and been doing martial arts since a kid, as a child. It can be there's a lot of different ways a fighter can go to, and I feel like at this moment where I'm at right now, it's nice to be able to feel like a kid again and just get back to my base and just kind of recrafting my style, where I'm not so much pro boxing and I'm not so much pro grappling or anything like that. I can kind of figure out, you know, what works for me and what doesn't. And it's fun just being able to watch even old school MMA fights. You know, I've been watching a lot of Anderson Silva, a lot of Chael Sonnen, a lot of Randy Couture, you know, just going back to the whole old school part of it, and try to go from there and see how the evolution of MMA goes, you know. And that's how I approach boxing, and it's been quite an adventure.
If Bellator called you and was like, hey, let's make this Heather Hardy fight happen, are you free and clear to sign with Bellator and do that?
Yeah, you know, as long as the opportunity is good, you know, obviously, absolutely. I'm ready to fight. I was getting ready for a boxing match back in June, and I ended up doing that TUF tryout. And, you know, since then, you know, even before that, I've just been constantly been at the gym, and now I've been waiting for an opportunity to jump right in there, whether it's in the ring or in the cage, and just challenge myself. So if that happens, you know, with Bellator, you know, obviously, hell yeah, you know, put us on TV, get the hype going on, you know, let's get paid, let's go do this.
That'd be awesome. We're gonna do any small amount that we can on social media to encourage that one, or any other fight, really. Anyone you want to fight was fine with us. Watching you fight anybody in any rules is always good in our book.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Absolutely. Well, we'll let you go now. We'd love to have you on again whenever you want, especially if you got some news for us. We'd love to have you on again. But thanks so much for the long suffering patience of breaking down that fight one more time for us. But it's also great just to hear about you and your training and your career. So thanks again for your time. Remind people where they can find you online.
Absolutely. Just plug in my name, Anna Hulton, AnnaJulaton, and you'll find me through Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, website, etc. So thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. Take care. It's always fun getting to talk to her.
Yeah, you know, and especially for her being so patient to talk about this, which, you know, as a boxing person, as an MMA person, I think it was definitely more intriguing for our side of the world to think about it. I think for boxing, that was probably more cringeworthy. I think a lot of people on the MMA side of things, you know, felt the same way that boxing people did about it, about the spectacle and whatnot. But I think there was definitely a lot more defending of MMA going on than defending of boxing. And so I think that kind of shifted the tide. But you know, hopefully it opens the doors for people like Anna Hulaton to kind of.
Yeah, I hope so.
And you know, MMA fighters in general. as a result of this fight. So
hope they get paid more in MMA. I'm not really excited to see MMA fighters fight in boxing any more than I am to see chess players.
That's the one thing that could come out of this,
you know,
is the impact Conor has on his UFC return. And yeah, what that sets. I mean,
that would be nice.
He was the first person to make seven figures in a right. If I'm remembering, guaranteed money, first person to make seven figures.
I doubt that's at true, UFC 196. But I'm not sure.
I mean, that's like just show money, not right. The combination of win and thing.
I don't know, but I'm sure Brock Lesnar had guaranteed maybe him seven figures. But I don't
maybe
know.
He was like he tied it, but he was definitely, I think, the first person to exceed $1 million. And of course, Nate exceeded $1 million, and you know, Brock Lesnar had his 2.5 million at UFC 200, and I think Jones was supposed to get $1 million for 200 before.
And
I think DC was going to get 800,000, and then he got 3 million for 205, and Rousey got 3 million for 207.
Right.
So like, even his impact in just that year really elevated everybody's pay, or at least people at the top.
Well,
elevated
a couple people's. Yeah. But yeah. I hope it goes. I hope he continues. I mean, Dana White, I don't know if you saw it, Mike, who said now that he thinks Conor McGregor deserves equity in the UFC. I mean, that's not really exactly a labor movement, but it's good for Conor. It's certainly well-deserved for Conor, because what he makes in the UFC is gross. He's a much bigger pay-per-view draw than Floyd Mayweather. If we didn't know it from the last couple years of his activity compared to the last couple years of Floyd Mayweather's activity and those pay-per-view draws and how much better Conor McGregor was selling, we certainly know it from if the UFC did, if the UFC's like estimate or leak that their statement that they did, what was it, over 6 million pay-per-view
buys.
Dana White is true.
Was caught on Uriah Faber's Instagram saying 6.5.
See, that just blows it away. Conor McGregor is a far bigger draw in every way than Floyd Mayweather right now, and he gets paid a 30th of what he gets paid in the UFC, of what Floyd gets paid in the UFC. So, yeah, I hope.
Well, it's guaranteed money
for him.
I mean, everybody focuses on the Conor making $100 million, but it's guaranteed money. And we don't really know how much he makes in the UFC.
We have no idea if he's going to make $100
million either. Well, yeah. And we also don't know how much he actually makes for a fight in the UFC outside of his guaranteed money.
Right.
And his most guaranteed money, as we just said, was $205 for $3 million. And he made 10 times that when he got paid $30 million in guaranteed money for this fight. So
still a fraction of what Floyd got. And Conor's the bigger draw. It's insane. Critics like me of this fight even happening, I feel, need to blame the UFC's business model. This fight happened because the UFC pays so little. Conor McGregor would rather fight people he has a better chance of beating in rules he trains for, but boxing pays so much better at the middle class and the upper class that he's like, well, screw it. Yeah, I'll go take a whooping for way more money than I've ever seen. So anyway, we should call Joe Lozon up. Enough of my bitching about this. Joel's on the line, or waiting on the line, he said, for us at this time. They just announced this fight. Him versus Clay Guida. Joel Lozon, Clay Guida. Certainly an action fight. I certainly hope it isn't, for my own personal reasons. It's a fight I've been dreading and for like 11 years. Both guys, awesome guys. Count them as friends. I don't want to see either one of them hurt or hurt one another. Everyone else in the world, including them, I'm sure, are really looking forward to this. What is that, Mike? November 11th? Or is that something like it's in November in Norfolk, Virginia, I think. But it's a freaking good fight. I don't know if it's the headlining fight or not. We want to ask Joe that ourselves. But Joe Lozon versus Clay Guida, two longtime veterans, two of the most exciting fighters on earth, just announced that they're fighting. And Joe's on vacation, but he said he's going to test out his rural Maine reception and see if he can
talk
to us about
Rocky.
It.
Rocky, he's out in the...
Joe!
How's it going?
Good, good. I'm here. This is Elias. I'm here with Mike. Extra Rounds. You're live with us, man. Thanks for making time.
No problem.
So we just told the fans that this is a technological experiment of sorts. You're in rural Maine. I mean, I'm assuming all of Maine is rural, and we're
just
seeing,
about.
Yeah, we're going to see how long this reception holds out, man. But how are things going over there? You guys are on vacation, having a good time?
Yeah, he rents a house up here, up in Old Orchard Beach, up in Maine. So he rents a house up here for the week. So we're up for a couple of days. And so I didn't know if this was going to be good. Hopefully, it doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, it's gotten a little softer times and a little louder, but we heard you, so we'll do what we can for sure, man.
Cool.
So we just told the fans that maybe hadn't heard about it that you're set to fight Clay Guida in November. Are you guys headlining the card? It certainly would seem to be a good headlining fight.
I'm sure we'll be on the main card, but I don't know if we're headlining.
Okay.
I think Pettis is on that card against someone good, like me. I forget who. There's a couple other. Diego Sanchez is on there against Matt Brown. It's a pretty solid card. So I'm not sure if we're headlining or, you know, co-main event or what, but I'm sure we'll be on the main card.
Joe, are you surprised that in the going on 12, by then it'll be 12 years for both you guys. You guys both have been, you and Clay have been in the UFC. Are you surprised that this fight hadn't ever happened before?
A little bit. You know, a lot of times it comes down to timing. You know what I mean? Like when I'm coming off a win, when he's coming off a win or a loss, when my last fight was, when his last fight was, we're both healthy, you know, we both are in the rankings, you know, there's a lot of things that have to happen for two guys to meet, you know? So, I'm a little surprised it's taken us this long, but I'm not that.
So how, from your perspective, what you know, how did it come about? Did you get a call saying, hey, Clay's signed to fight you, or did they call you and say, ask you first? Like, how did this go down?
So for my last fight, I had a pretty quick turnaround. So I fought in January, and then I fought right again up in April. So it was a really, really fast turnaround. I definitely want to have a little bit of time off. So I was looking to fight, like, August. And then a lot of the shows were international in August. Mm. So, you know, there really wasn't a spot for me. So we were looking at the September card. And, you know, that was all perfect. That was good. You know, I was in constant talks with Sean Shelby. And then it didn't work out. You know, just, you know, the you know, everyone got matched up. They just didn't really have a spot on a card. And so it just, you know, we were talking about maybe trying to fight Clay then. And it just, the timing just wasn't right. So, you know, we got pushed a couple months. But that was basically, you know, how it all came about. You know, I was trying to fight September. You know, I think Clay wanted a little bit more time. So, you know, we're going to do it in November.
You're on vacation now, at least for a little bit. What's your tentative plan for camp? Do you go right into camp when you get out? Do you're gonna give yourself a month? Because I mean, you've got a lot of stuff going on too. You guys have another baby on the way. It's a busy time for y'all.
I was planning on. I mean, I've been geared up and ready to go for. You know, I wanted to fight September. You know, a couple weeks here. So I've been geared up. You know, I didn't know who I was going to be fighting, but I've been training really, really hard. You know, getting ready for September. So it didn't work out. You know, so. You know, that's not a big deal. You know, I'm in pretty good shape right now. You know, I'm not in shape yet, but I've been in the gym. I've been lifting. I've been, you know, training hard. I've been doing everything. So, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, I have a couple of days where I'm out of the gym, you know, this week. But otherwise, I mean, we're good to go. You know, we're going full steam ahead. You know, it's like I'm one of those guys that I like to stay in the gym all the time. And sometimes that kind of leads to a lot of kind of nagging injuries because I'm my own worst enemy where, you know, I got something that's bothering me, but I'm still training all the time. And I try to train around things, but still, you're in the gym every single day. You know, even if you train light, you know, things get annoyed. You get, it flares up a little bit. So, you know, I'm ready to go. You know, I think we're like 10 or 11 weeks right now. 10 or 11 weeks right now. So plenty of time for sparring, plenty of time for everything else. You know, I'm just, like I said, I've been getting geared up to fight September anyway. So it's not a big deal that, you know, take a few days off and then just get back after it.
Now, Norfolk's kind of close to home. Is this... Do you view it that way, at least?
For sure. I mean, anytime we're in the same time zone is great, you know, because nothing changes. You know, for me, that's always kind of what messes you up a little bit. You know, whenever you go somewhere, it's always the difference in time zones. It's like you're a little bit jet lagged or it's a long flight. You know, this is great. You know, I think I could drive it in like 9 or 10 hours, you know, but we'll take like a short, like, you know, hour and a half flight. You know, it'll be perfect.
I want to ask you some specific stuff about the fight. And obviously, fighters can't, you know, reveal too much of what they're thinking, and certainly we never know what's going to happen in a fight till it happens. But if you're honest, I'm wondering. I mean, not that you concede anything in a fight, and you know you wrestle hard and you're a really great wrestler. But if you think about, like, okay, chances are or whatever, like the worst case scenarios. Do you imagine, Joe, that there's a good amount a good chance that A, you may have to spend a good amount of time fighting off your back, which you're comfortable doing and comfortable scrambling, obviously. And B, on the positive side, do you imagine that if you're able to keep it on the feet, or if when it is on the feet, that you'll be able to or have to pick him apart with just like more clean striking?
At this point in camp, you know, we haven't even had like our initial coaches meeting, but we'll have that soon, probably this weekend or, you know, early next week. But we're going to start talking about, you know, all the different, you know, problems that, you know, that Clay presents, you know, and right off the bat, I think, you know, you think about his motor. He's got great cardio. He doesn't stop moving the entire time. even after he fights three or five rounds, he's still bouncing around, you know, moving nonstop. It looks as fresh as he did at the opening bell. You know, so my cardio has got to be, you know, super sharp. He's got great wrestling. He's got good stand-up. You know, I think it's more kind of just, I think it's more like more speed kind of stuff than it is like a lot of like really heavy strikes. So he kind of just moves around a lot. You know, it's kind of tough to track him down. You know, he has a lot of head movement, you know. So those are like kind of the things that we have to kind of focus on and work on. You know, but, you know, during camp, we're gonna have sparring partners and trainer partners. They're going to emulate all those different things. They're going to do all those things better than him. You know, we'll rotate in fresh guys, and that will kind of deal with the cardio aspect of things, and, you know, split rounds and do all that kind of stuff. So I'll constantly have fresh guys rotating in. You know, I get some really good wrestlers I can work with. I get some guys that have great head movement, and, you know, I might have to have someone grow out the hair a little bit or put on a wig or something to deal with the long hair. But, you know, we start every camp thinking, you know, worst possible thing. Like, oh, this guy's so good at this. He's so good at this. He's so good at this. You know, as camp goes on, we start taking those advantages away. And, you know, we negate them and figure out how we can capitalize and counter them back and deal with them, you know. So I'm not super worried about anything that Clay does. I don't think anything's going to, like, super surprise us. You know, I think we got to put the work in. You know, we have to be in really good shape. We have to be ready to go hard for 15 minutes and bell to bell. Because I know he's going to be fresh. I know he's going to be, you know, strong. I know he's going to be sharp. You know, we have to be able to, you know, keep pace. I think that's the big obstacle for this fight.
Now, it sounds like, you know, of course it sounds like a joke when you're talking about a training partner putting on a wig. But I was in your camp when you were training for Takanori Gomi, and you had your teammate, fellow fighter Andy Aiello, dye his hair blonde. So yep. I gotta ask. I mean, you know, are you serious? Might you guys consider a long haired dude just for that reason?
I got a kid that trains in my gym. He's not as good at MMA. He's kind of new to MMA, but he's got the long hair. He's got the man bun going. He's a great wrestler. I'm sure I'll be spending a lot of time doing work with him. You know, this camp. You know, it's just, you know. So yeah, I mean, we're gonna try to emulate everything. You know, we're going to try and emulate everything we can. You know, like, I really feel like, you know, for Clay in particular, you know, like, I feel like that long hair does have a big role because he's constantly moving his head. It's kind of tough to get a read on, you know, where he's moving and what's going on. He's just, you know, his head is constantly in motion. It's constantly like this, like, big blur of hair. And I think a lot of people have trouble kind of, you know, zoning in on it, you know. You know, I think that, you know, come fight week, when it's fight time, I will be supremely confident. I will think that I have the better wrestling, the better jiu-jitsu, the better cardio, the better boxing, the better everything. But right now, he's better at everything, so we got to put some work in.
This kid's just in the gym doing his thing, and all of a sudden he's going to be working in training camp with Joe Loza because he has a man bun.
That's the way it goes. Have long hair.
I mean,
I got to breathe in all his hair. You know, I got to choke on his hair and all that stuff. So he's got to do some sparring rounds with me.
That seems awesome. Really lucky for that kid. Like, that's a great experience.
Well, everyone goes to that gym, I'm assuming, you know, with the hopes of getting to get time in with Joe. Because for those that don't know, Lozon MMA, Joe's there teaching. Joe's there training. He's doing his training camps there. So it's not like one of these situations where, you know, a fighter licenses out their name, you know, and you see him or her, you know, once or twice a year. Like, you're in there. I was there last week at your camp, Joe, and you were teaching once, at least for that Gomi fight. So, yeah, he's very much involved.
Yep.
He's very much involved there.
I really think, you know, one of my coaches, Joe Popper, always says, you know, to teach once is to learn twice, you know, and it's so true. There's so many times, like, you know, you teach it and you kind of, you know, you correct the issues that other people are having and mistakes and everything like that, and it makes you better, you know. So I'm into my gym all the time. Like, I'm there 6 days a week, running classes 6 days a week, you know. Like, I'm always there, you know, either morning or night or sometimes both. But I'm there, I'm putting in the work, and, you know, the better I make my guys, the better they help me, and, you know, the better I do in the long run.
That's awesome. Well, Joe, we wanted to touch base with you just after this fight was announced. There's plenty more to talk about coming down the road. We'd love to have you on again. But for now, we'll let you get back to the coast there, and hopefully you guys enjoy your time. We're glad the reception held out, and we're glad you made time for us, man.
I'll be back at civilization, not staring at the waves and being on the beach away from cell towers.
It's good to get away from that sometimes, though. So thanks again, Joe.
It
appreciate
is.
It, brother.
Thank you.
Take care.
Always appreciate someone taking time out of their vacation to talk to us.
Totally.
Maine's rural, but not like in a country kind of way. It's very hills and mountains and then whatnot. Beautiful rocky coast. George Bush Sr., I think, used to you know, like every president kind of has like their vacation spot.
Right, right.
Trump's is in Florida.
Yeah.
Weekend homes. But George Bush Sr., I think, went to a place in Maine. I can't remember what the name of it was.
There. He was from out there.
Yeah, it starts with a K.
Kennebunkport. Kennebunkport.
Something like that. That sounds like, right.
Yeah.
But I remember when we were, because we lived in New England for a little bit, we went on a road trip up to Maine, and I remember my dad like stopping, and you could see the house out there, and like it was a big deal.
Is it super pretty?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It is really gorgeous. This is Bar Harbor Island. That's really, really, really pretty. Now, I only stayed along the coast. Mm-hmm. I didn't go more inland, but, you know, there's not a whole lot of huge cities, or at least as two kids from Chicago would be accustomed to cities or even suburbs being. But right. It's definitely, like, natural beauty.
That's cool.
Very, very beautiful part of the country. But yeah, interesting to get his thoughts on the fight.
Yeah, it's a great fight.
You know, Oklahoma, when they're getting ready to play Texas, they would bring in these like huge stereo equipment, like speakers, like for a concert, and they would play the Texas fight song and like crowd noise all week to prepare for that fight because it's such like a raucous environment.
Smart.
Like they don't do that for every practice, but they do it for Texas. And that's what like him bringing in the hair to get used to it. Like that's kind of what it made me think. Like you're trying to replicate as many of the elements as you can to like get accustomed to it.
It's smart, you know, like
you never hear people doing that with the hair though. That's like it's definitely a uniquely Joe Lozen thing.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You hear people getting concerned about it. Gray Maynard's camp apparently really wanted, and that's the one time that Clay had his hair all put together was for that Gray Maynard fight. They were trying to take advantage of some athletic commission like rules. So people are concerned about the hair, but I haven't heard anyone tell me that they really prepared for it in that way. Maybe they wish they had. I don't know if you remember that fight. So a fight that Clay got robbed on in a decision, in my view, it wasn't like a titillating fight, but he controlled it. He was pissed that they wouldn't have his hair going free. And I don't know that this is why he did it, but it certainly seemed like to poke fun at the commission's mandate, he had his hair braided, but then he put like pink and blue barrettes in his hair too, just to be like, all right, I got to put my hair up. And just poking fun at that. But yeah, that's a heck of a thing. Do you remember this story when, this is years ago, when they were doing a UFC game? I don't remember which one, but they were having trouble with like making the hair realistic and stuff. This is before they had women fighting in the UFC, I guess.
The first UFC, but
it was one. I mean, the first one was like before Clay was even in the UFC. But like,
was it that long?
Oh yeah, the first one that they ever had. Yeah, it was a long time ago. Then they never did a follow up. I don't even know who made it.
Oh no, but, I meant the first EA.
Oh yeah, I don't remember. Yeah, it might have been the first EA Sports one. That's what I can't. That's what I wasn't sure. But they came. I guess they offered. They went to the UFC and said, "We can't do his hair. Can he cut it?" So the UFC offered him like $60,000 to cut it. He was like, "No, I'm good." Said, "Add a couple zeros onto that and we'll think about it." But that hair is important to him for sure, man. Even if it's just like a style thing, it's important to him.
You gotta keep the hair, you know. It's your brand at that point.
At that point, right? Yeah, totally.
You know.
It totally is. I don't know how he does it within his face, but it definitely, like the old Roman soldiers, they would have these like tassels in their. And it just draw the eye away. And that's why you see a lot of boxers will do like crazy shit like on their shorts or even on their boots and stuff on their shoes. And it's just like the momentary chance that you might draw their eye away from what they need to be looking at. I think he
uses Floyd fights in sequence, basically really shiny.
I mean, I think I know like I don't I it's funny, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of it. Yeah. Maybe he also likes that, but I'm sure he's thinking about that. A guy like that doesn't not think about every little thing, right? Like Mayweather.
Think about people reacted to that Conor McGregor shaved his head for this fight. Like people, like there was a lot of talk on social media. Like, I can't believe Conor shaved his head.
He's done it before.
It's gonna be, yeah. He like he
changes his hair like every.
I don't
fight.
Know if he's gone like he was like shaved. I mean, without being like bald, like a one guard or something.
Right,
all
right, 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 right.
I know he's like done it where he's like left like the patch. Sure. And he like did it for aerodynamics. Or
true,
whatever. But
right.
I mean, think about like his hair's never been longer than mine, and the outlet. Think about like if Clay Guida showed up like that when people would be like, "Who is this guy?"
It's seismic. Yeah. I know people probably if it went like other than like the tattoos, they might have like a double look at this point.
Yeah.
I misspoke earlier saying it'll be 12 years this fall that these guys have been in, him and Joe Lozen have been in the UFC. It's 11 years. They both debuted in 2000. 2006, I think Clay in October 2006 and Joe in September 2006. But all that time, people have seen him with one hairdo, you know? So you're totally right. Yeah, it would be distracting at this point to not see him in that.
Well, I guess we can wrap up with a few points on Mayweather-McGregor before we call it a day.
Yeah, there was a thing. I wanted to see if we had time for it. I wanted to mention it was this story that was floating around. I don't know if you saw this. It was this story that I was seeing shared a lot, Mike, on Facebook. And then I even saw like some journalist friends sharing it. And I saw it picked up by like legitimate outlets like a CBS radio news, website, CBS affiliate radio stations, a website, share it. It's a story. The headline was like, Conor McGregor donates $200 million to
Floyd.
To
yeah.
Floyd, thank you. Floyd Mayweather Jr. donates $200 million to Houston hurricane victims. And listen, like, I'd love for that to be true. But now I realize, I looked this morning again, Mike, and now like it's on Snopes and like there's people talking about it. But a couple days ago, or yesterday actually, early this morning, I had a little Facebook conversation with a friend of mine. They were sharing it, and they were sharing it like, wow, this is great. Or, hey, I don't like the guy, but look at this. You know, look what he's done. This is pretty awesome. It takes like 2 seconds looking at the story that they were circulating to realize it wasn't a legitimate story. I don't quite understand with a story like this why someone would completely make a fake, non-true story. I don't understand
people do it for fun. But yeah, traffic. There's like
traffic makes sense.
Well, it reminds me of the whole like Batman thing from like The Dark Knight when the butler, what's the name, Alfred's telling Christian Bale's character like some people just like
burn.
To watch. Yeah,
kind of yeah. Like that thing. And it's happening a lot now, right? So for whatever, and so I kind of have like I want to use this as an illustration for folks who are out there because I saw people that I was surprised share this news story, and I think. Depends on what you want to hear. You might read a headline and share it and assume everything we see is legitimate. Just as a helpful thing, you know, it's a little tautological. But here's some things you can look at. So I looked at the story. One, it was like the site was like HoustonChronicle-TV.com or something. All right. There is a Houston Chronicle.
Yeah.
There's a newspaper. Check, look them up. That URL is not their website.
I knew like somebody in our Slack channel dropped in the story and was like, look at this. And I knew immediately.
Just from looking at the URL.
Because... Well, I'm from Texas, and like, my dad lives in Houston, so I know, and I know what that website is,
yeah.
And I know it's Cron, C-H-R-O-N .com.
Right.
So like, I knew as soon as I saw the URL that it was fake.
Yeah, so that the URL is a good indicator.
I'm the only one. Like, you know what I mean? How many people would have noticed that?
Yeah, and there's a lot of other indicators, so let's move on. So let's say if you search that story, search the subject, Floyd Mayweather donating $200 million on Google, no one else is reporting this but this one website, which is... sounding like it's attached to a newspaper.
Ain't doing that.
What's that? I'm giving people this. The whole point is to give people instructions how to not look like a fucking idiot by posting fake news. So one, Google it. See if anyone else is reporting it. It's pretty easy to do with Google. I'm not telling you to go to the research library, right? Nowadays, it's pretty easy. And then you look at the copy itself. And I know this is like preaching to the choir with you, Mike. But if you notice in that story, if folks that have read it, it doesn't say who's giving the money to. It says all the time vaguely when they quote Floyd, when they talk about it, that he's donating it to the victims. Yeah, but who's he donating it to? The municipality of Houston, the Red Cross, some other group of nonprofits that are helping with aid. They never specify. It's not, unless you're going to go over a city and drop it out of a helicopter, you don't just give it to the victims.
That would be kind of his style.
That would be. And if unless that happened, and if they did do that, it would certainly make news again. Again, back to no one else reporting it. That would be one of the largest gifts, if not the largest, like at any one point in modern history that an individual is like given to a cause just in that moment. It would make news. Other people would be picking it up. Also, it doesn't say who he gave the quote to. It says Floyd said this during a visit to Houston. It doesn't say he said it in a statement. They didn't say that there was a press conference. They didn't say it was told to the Houston Chronicle, told to this reporter. A real news report will say not just that it was something was said, but it'll tell you who they said it to. To a newspaper during an appearance, that nowadays that they tweeted it on an Instagram post, that their representatives released a statement. They're going to say who he said it to. They're going to say who he gave the money to in this case. And you know what's also interesting, speaking of social media, you go on social media, Floyd never said anything about it on his own Twitter. If you're not going to go on Google and search for other newspaper articles because that's boring, we're all on Twitter. We're all on Instagram. You could check his account and see he wasn't saying anything else about it. There was also no indication that he'd even been in Houston in the days since his fight and this happening. There was no photos of him there. And this is important, too. And this is kind of like where I'll end it. Floyd Mayweather, I think, you know, this was used by a lot of people. I saw a lot of the posts just among friends. This is completely anecdotal, saying, oh, I don't like him because of, you know, his woman battering, but it's nice he's doing this. Well, let's talk about that. Floyd Mayweather, even, you know, even in the cases where he's been convicted, even in the cases where he's pled no contest or pled guilty to beating women, he has always then later said, hey, there's no photos of it. Basically saying, pics or it didn't happen. Well, for this supposed really great deal, you might want to, in this digital age of social media, look for photos. If there's no photos of Floyd Mayweather out in Houston, it's a pretty good indication it didn't happen. And that's a good enough standard for him to deny all the women he's beaten and been convicted of beating. It's a good enough standard to kind of negate this BS propaganda to like elevate him. So that was something that came off tangential from the fight. It was really bothering me because I saw even journalists posting it. Check sources, guys. Become a little bit more of a savvy reader. It's a strange and scary time. There's a lot more information out there. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So that was a little pet peeve, half hot take, half instructional that I wanted to go over. So thanks for bearing with me and thanks for letting me run through that, Mike.
Yeah, it's just always worth the extra second to not look silly. But if anything, hopefully it raised some awareness of what's going on in Houston and donating. And J.J. Watt's been doing a lot of stuff. Houston Texans defensive end. He's raised like over $6 million, I think, wow, so far. And every time he reaches his benchmark, he ups the next goal. And he's been doing it like $1 million at a time, but he went from 6 to 10 million. And you can donate to help all the people in Houston at youcaring.com/JJ Watt. Youcaring, CARING.com/JJ Watt.
That's awesome.
A lot of people in Houston need help. Derek Lewis out driving. I don't know if you saw any of this. Driving, rescuing people. Was on ESPN, said he rescued over 100 people, including a guy who would not leave his Confederate flag behind. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he talked to, I think, maybe MMA Junkie Radio, or it was on MMA Junkie. This guy didn't want to leave his Confederate flag behind and, like, apologized for taking it into the car with Derek Lewis, and Derek Lewis says, like, he's like, I don't care, man, whatever, just come on, let's go. And which, you know, Derek Lewis is an incredible human being, but right. You know, I think you leave it. He said that the dude's wife or girlfriend or whatever was like upset that he insisted on bringing it, but
if you've held on to it since the 1860s, it makes sense you don't want to let go of it now. He lost that treasonous war a long time ago, right. But man, that's remarkable. That's really remarkable.
So
yeah.
There's a lot of good stories like that, and I think that one of the cool things is that it seems like a lot of people in Houston, like Derek Lewis, are coming together to help each other out. So
that's awesome.
Well, that wraps up the show. No more Mayweather McGregor talk for hopefully ever.
Ever.
You know, we'll see if the rematch comes.
Right.
So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to watch the show. We will see you next week.